All right, welcome. This is Mike Adams here. I've got a great interview for you today. And, you know, we talk about history and the formation of countries and states. And sometimes it's hard to see history in the making, but we're going to be joined by a gentleman who is making history right now with the push for a formation of the new California state. Because, of course, people love California, but they hate the West Coast politics that are destroying California. So how do you save California? Well, one way is to make a new state out of the vast majority of the geography of California. And our guest here is the president and founder of New California State. That's the website, newcaliforniastate.com. It's Paul Preston. He's also a radio host with a show, Agenda 21 Radio, at a21r.com. Mr. Preston, it's an honor to have you on. I don't know why we haven't talked before, but I really look forward to this interview. Thank you for joining me.
Well, Mike, thank you very much for allowing us to come on and talk about what we're doing. And I agree. We have been passing in the night, I think, many, many years, but it's nice to be on with you for the first time.
Yeah, absolutely. Often I'm interviewing people who say they just talked with you about something, or you're making news that we're covering in other ways. But hey, we get a chance to talk today. So let's start with the obvious question. Let's assume our audience, maybe they don't even live in California and they're not familiar with what you're doing there and how you're doing it. And can you explain the big picture of what is the New California State movement about, and how do you propose to achieve this result?
Well, you know, I've lived in California pretty much all my life. Well, I was 6 months old when I was brought to California back in the 50s, and don't ask the date, but anyway, but I've watched and been a part of the California all my life since then, going to public education. I became a public school teacher and then a school administrator, and spent 41 years in the system. And all throughout that time, especially in the later years of the last 20 years of being in the system, from about 1991, 92 to around 2010, I really saw some major changes developing. And of course, I recognize it as the march towards totalitarianism. And so I did a lot of study. I went to Eastern Europe and I studied the collapse of communism in 1992. Did a lot of research there, went to the Olympic Games and more research and study and so on. Made a lot of contacts. And I really, over the years, came to understand what brought down communism, and but it also caused communism. And what I could see in the signs and symptoms that I was seeing there in Europe at the time about the elements that brought it down were actually symptoms that were developing in California within the education system, but it was also systemic throughout California and everything that they were doing.
Now, so, can I ask you just briefly, did you get a sense that this was all directed by somebody, or was this some kind of bizarre spontaneous totalitarian slant that people were jumping into because they could? Like, where was this coming from?
Well, it's very clear. It was very clear to me when I traveled there and when I was seeing in education, and one of the causations that brought me to go there to study it, it was very, very clear there was an orchestration going on. That I recognized that. And actually, when I was teaching biology, I'm a biologist, I'm a geneticist, and also virologist. Those are my specialties. And as I was teaching my kids the genetics back in the 1970s, I was talking about all the things that we're seeing today as forbidden fruit from the genetics tree. And this was something that, you know, because I was very much a realistic scientist who believed in data and also the scientific method to teach the kids scientific method, proper scientific logic. And I could see back in the 70s with the whole global cooling scheme, because back in the 70s, it was global cooling, not global warming.
Right.
And that was they were trying to drive it into the curriculum of the secondary schools in California, and everybody was standing up to it. So you're not going to teach that. We're not going to teach that. Get those curriculum guides out and so on. So standing firm against it automatically as a biologist, as an environmental science teacher, an environmentalist, back in the 70s, I knew that there was something really going on, orchestrating from behind the scenes. And I suspect that it was so much of what my actual father had taught me about communism. That saying, you know, here I am an educator in the 1970s, and they were teaching me these things in the 50s and 60s as a kid. And here it is, I'm dealing with it in the schools, or seeing the signs and symptoms. And it really started to accelerate in terms of the action plan throughout the the public education system in California, because it was really back in the day when I went to school and I first started teaching, it was a fantastic public education system. Nothing like we know now. It's been completely federalized as an education system, but the public education system back in the day was very much driven by the local communities. And
I've got to ask you real quick. I mean, I love the fact that you're the background that you just mentioned, which I did not know about you. I think it's fantastic. It means that you and I can have a conversation about photosynthesis, and we both know what we're talking about. And I just have to ask you, what do you think about the demonization of carbon? I mean, this is the most prominent element of life on the table of elements, and now we're at war with an element. Did you ever think you'd see that?
Well, we saw that in the 70s. And I had some fantastic mentors at the school that I was at the time, Covina High School. And they were just in awe that they were trying to make the argument that carbon was something that's going to poison the environment. And, you know, of course, we all understand photosynthesis and what that all does. And, you know, and of course, carbon, you know, we are carbon based units. That's what I tell people. This is just something that they've successfully taken something that's so critical and something that's so needed, and really there's not a lot of it in the environment, and demonized it. And they've done it successfully. I mean, we have to admit that they've done that. And from all their science springs that pseudoscience of the demonization of carbon, global warming, global cooling, all that stuff is wrapped up in it. You know, all this stuff is just, it's false information. It's data that cannot be corroborated. None of the scientific processes that they put out here. That's why when the whole thing happened with the Wuhan virus thing, I recognized it day one. It was a farce. It was biological warfare is what it was. Uh-huh. And we promulgated that information all throughout California and the New California Movement. And obviously it turned out to be we're now finding out even more information that all these vaccines were never really thoroughly tested as we knew. The genetics behind it was just appalling to think about.
Yeah.
We could talk for hours about that. We know what they're talking about here, guys. This has all been a farce, and now look where we're at. They've successfully pulled the farce off, and now
have. And think about the economic damage. Now let's move over to economics for a minute. But the economic damage that they inflicted upon the people of California, the small business owners, the employees, and so on, with the lockdowns. And that was by government decree, and also backed by just quackery and fraud. So that shows the dangers of going along with bad science is you can destroy your economy from that.
Right. And that's exactly what's happened to our economy in California. In fact, Chris Streeters, who's our financial consultant and vice president of New California, he's a financial expert and known. He's very good friends with people in high places. And he has actually worked with the Chinese government on how they articulate and do things with the West. But, you know, he's now calling for a depression as of tonight. That's what the meeting was all about. The next step in this financial decline that we see worldwide is a depression. He called it the D word.
Yeah.
And we have put a lot of stock in his projections. We said, and he and I got to know each other back in 1994 in the Orange County bankruptcy. We were two of the whistleblowers and recognized the Orange County bankruptcy to be a Cloward and Piven strategy put in by Bill Clinton to destroy the California Republican Party, which they did, because Orange County went bankrupt. It was a big insult to the Republican Party. And so the Republican Party has never, ever, ever recovered from that bankruptcy until even today. Of course, it's now a totalitarian government, but it never recovered from it. That was one of the first legs they had to pull out, was to get rid of Orange County Republican conservatives. And of course, they successfully managed to do that. And I think they did it totally in the 2018 elections, but that's all part of this history. But Chris has laid it out very clearly about we were going to be able to come about and create and actually be directly involved with the New California State Movement at this point in time, this month, actually in October of 2020. He projected this number about 7 years ago, and here we are, and everybody's around like, I can't believe this guy. He knows what he's talking about. And of course, that's why we're injecting ourselves right now as New California, because we recognize that what we are going to offer with 90% of the landmass of California is we're going to offer a new economic outlet and retain our liberty by, of course, a new constitution.
You know, what's extraordinary is if you were to create what I'm going to call a freedom zone in the continental United States, you would attract so much investment and entrepreneurship, and inventors and corporations would set up their domiciles there just by having either low taxes or no taxes and not having a regulatory suffocation environment. But I'm sure that you and all the people you work with already realize that you could also be the health freedom tourism destination of America for natural health, and your economy would just balloon with abundance like nothing we've ever seen before. I'm sure you realize this though, right?
We do. We do realize this is not, you know, we're not playing for fifth place in the world economy in New California. We're playing for number two. We really are. And we know we can do that. And we know that if we provide a constitution that's by we the people, go back to the, you know, the original constitution in 1787, go back to the Declaration of Independence and use that as part of all our tools and the Bill of Rights, we know we can construct a free market economy that will be second to none.
Uh-huh.
And we have the resources to do it. We got the water, we got the power, we got the energy. And, you know, the brain drain has been enormous because everybody's gone to Florida, everybody's gone. And I can't blame them. You know, look, this is a tyranny out here.
Yeah, but a lot of them would come back.
In a heartbeat.
Yeah. And the other thing is, I want to point out a principle that I believe in. I want to ask if you share this, but I think that abundance is natural because there's so many gifts from nature and God, like you said, water and sunlight and climate to grow food in and, you know, seeds and all these amazing gifts that, in fact, the only way to keep humanity from being wealthy is to suppress them, which is what we've all been living under this entire time. Right. So if you just take off the shackles, then abundance is automatic.
It absolutely is. And they have kept the shackles on here for way too long. You know, we're into a so-called drought, which is a bogus drought. They sat there and they opened up Shasta Dam and drained Shasta Lake. They did this over a year and a half period. They did the same thing in Oroville. They did the same thing in all their reservoirs just so they could call it a drought right now. Now, this is what goes on in terms of their manipulation of the environment. The environmentalists are the environmental terrorists is what they are, because they're doing things like this. When we had all these unbelievable forest fires out here, it was all promulgated by chemtrails. I'll say chemtrails again, because we live with chemtrails out here in a big way, and also poor forest management. But, you know, also what they figured out is that they could get federal subsidies for these fires if they fought the fires. And of course, that created what we coined to be disaster capitalism. So all these forest fires out here that have been burning at very, very high temperatures, especially like up in Paradise, you just take them and blanket aluminum oxide all over the valley, which they do constantly up here, and they also do it north of here in the jet stream, will automatically desiccate the trees. But the aluminum is in the trees, but also in the trees and in the plants is another element called iron. And when you combine iron and aluminum oxide together, then you get thermite. And the fires burn between 3 and 4,000 degrees. And that's exactly what happened in Paradise. That's exactly what's been happening in all the fires. That's why a lot of these forests don't come back, because, as you know, how forests are, you know, a lot of the seeds from a lot of the plants are fire resistant, but they're only fire resistant up to 1500 degrees.
Uh-huh.
So we have millions of acres now in California that's been burned, deliberately burned. They created a new thing called Cal Fire, and Cal Fire is a huge bureaucracy with all brand new trucks and firefighting equipment. And of course the overtime that goes along with it, paying, you know, huge amounts of money out. And then the federal government has been subsidizing that. That's why we call it disaster capitalism.
Yep.
And it's
their model.
It's a deliberate burn down of the forest. The pristine forest is just much of it's gone in California now.
I think after COVID, it's no longer controversial to say that the government, they are the terrorists.
They are.
Whether we're talking, you know, vaccines or the masking. Did you see the recent research just came out that showed that children who were kept at home and, you know, during children who were born during COVID and didn't have the socialization and were masked and so on, they suffer from cognitive disabilities. Have you seen that?
Absolutely. No, I haven't seen it, but I know that to be true. You know, all you need to do is go to Romania. In fact, ask John Wadsworth about Romania and Ceausescu and the baby factories that he had there, you know, and the sensory deprivation of the children. Same thing, same exact thing. That's the way that they, of course, made money, was that they would sell babies. And that's that plays right into the human, the child sex trafficking that's been going on primarily by communist countries and totalitarian societies, China. They're all guilty of it. And so now are we in California and across the nation. You know, this is one of the things I tell people, you know, in the Constitution, Article 4, Section 4, which is what we are all about doing, Article 4, Section 3 is about creating a new state. And it says that if you want to create a state from a pre-existing state, then you have to work with the legislature concerned and then move on to Congress. There's another Article 4, Article 4, Section 4, which tells you why you should move on if your state is not doing what they should be doing, because Article 4 concerns what's called the guarantee clause, that every American is guaranteed a Republican form of government. The word democracy is not used by the founding fathers ever. They knew what that meant. The other one, too, of course, is freedom from invasion. That's number two. And the third one is freedom from domestic violence. Now, I've asked crowds, I've spoken in all 58 counties. I speak all the time. Then one of the first questions I asked people, I said, do you guys have that today? Do you have a Republican form of government? Do you have freedom from invasion? Do you have freedom from, and nobody raises their hand.
Right.
Not one, because they recognize that the government is not providing that. That gives us cause to take it to the next level. But what we talk about in terms of child sex trafficking and this whole invasion, this is slavery, Mike. This is just old, good old-fashioned slavery, and just in a different package. And I call it the trafficking in human flesh and slavery. And then you can get into the child sex trafficking thing, which was, by the way, I was trained in 1986 by the LA Police Department's Crimes Against Children's Task Force. So I've known all the things that are coming out. I've known it since then. I've worked in the system with that, with child sex trafficking, for years. And again, the scope is so large that it just blows the minds of most people. But, at that time, I was really doing a lot of work in Southern California, which is where a lot of the brunt of a lot of that happens. But we have a big problem in Northern California, too.
So explain to us, you started to talk about the mechanism of forming the new California state, but continue, if you would, please, because I'm curious. I think our audience is curious. How are you going to make this happen? And then the corollary question to that is going to be, well, won't Newsom try to stop you? What can he and the rest of the bureaucrats do to stop this from happening?
Well, you know, what we had to do, first of all, when we first started looking around about what's going on in our culture and society, keep in mind that one of the things it says in the Declaration of Independence, that government should not be changed for light or transient reasons. And I agree with that. You know, we don't want to be changing our government all the time. Look what you get. You get chaos. And you can have sub chaos if you're constantly changing your constitution. You know, that's why you don't change a constitution all the time, because you know it's going to throw everything into chaos. So, and what we discovered, and I saw this coming, and like-minded people through the Tea Party and so on met up. We started talking about this, and one thing led to another. And I was always looking for the outlet in the late 90s. In the 2000s, as I was seeing this, the school districts and the schools just burrow right into totalitarianism. And that's when I discovered, well, you know, I'll go back to the Constitution and study it. You know, first I go to the Bible, then I go to the Constitution and say, there's answers here. There's got to be answers. And of course, I studied the Constitution for quite a while. It wasn't really until around 2006, actually, that I read the Declaration of Independence, and I said, you know, there's something wrong with my reading of this Declaration of Independence, because I wasn't getting it, you know. And then I said to myself, you know, let's take a look at it as a Christian, because, you know, everybody has played down these three documents as non-Christian documents, you know, the battle and the destruction and the bad mouthing and so on that's gone on of our Constitution and the founding fathers is just over the top. And a lot of kids don't understand it. We stopped teaching it in the 90s. That was a very, very bad thing, I think, to stop teaching it. But, you know, if you take a look at it as a holy document, as a revered document like the Bible, and apply your Christian principles to it, it all becomes clear and it all becomes open for you. And the same with the Constitution, it's a whole way of looking at things differently in that perspective. And thank God it is, because they were Christian men. The founders who wrote the Declaration of Independence, there were 56 of them, 54 of those founders were Presbyterians, mostly Protestants, or Presbyterians. They were Protestants, mostly Presbyterians. There's one Catholic and one Jew. Now, I'm not promoting one religion over another. Don't go there. I'm just saying that was the demographics at the time. And those, they were a very small minority, but they understood tyranny. In fact, the their forefathers left England, left Europe because of the tyranny that was over there. And where was that tyranny coming from? Mostly the church. And they were at odds because Martin Luther, you know, he proposed a different way of looking at Christ and Jesus as your savior. And that run against the church. And it wasn't just the church's ideology, it was also the economics of it. And pretty soon they started to suffer. But in Europe, people were fleeing the, you know, all the persecutions that were going on. That's what started this country. The founding fathers knew this, and they understood what a totalitarian looked like, what a totalitarian was. So that's why they restructured everything. They wrote the Declaration of Independence. And I tell people, you know, one of the key words to understand in the Declaration of Independence is the word independence, because the word had been only discovered and written about since 1661, which is not long before the Declaration of Independence being written and that word being used.
Huh.
And I heard a story one time that King George, when the Declaration of Independence came out, it was published and adopted. It took him a good month to figure out what the word independence meant.
Wow. It just wasn't part of the vocabulary or the reality that people were living in, because everybody was a subject under some ruler.
That's correct. That is, you were a subject under a ruler. And these were the first people to say, we're not going to do that. You know, we don't take a knee only to God. We don't take a knee to a king. And, you know, that's why it's so important when people look back at Obama, and he bent over and basically took a knee to the Saudis, and everybody is just appalled by that. Well, we all should be appalled by that, because Americans don't do that. That's very antithetical to what we do and what we believe, based upon the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, and the Bill of Rights. We are not about a monarchy ruling us, and we have God-given rights, and those God-given rights are told in, of course, the Declaration of Independence, and no one can take those rights from us unless we surrender them. And see, that's one of the key concepts to understand right there. As a Christian, you have to ask yourself, who do you answer to? Do you answer to the king? No, you answer to God, and God has given you these rights, and that way you are empowered by God. Now, who's the higher authority here? A government worker, or you, who's been empowered by God to make sure your government's working right?
But does all of this, does it mean that you and a bunch of counties are simply going to assert this and have your own Declaration of Independence? And
well, we already did that. Actually, we studied it. We talked about it. You know, we got a bunch of people together, and we studied with the Jefferson Group. I was part of the Jefferson leadership for a couple of years. Learned a lot that way. But then we separated, because there's a real strong thing you have to understand about Article 4, Section 3. It says that if you want to form a state, then from a pre-existing state, you have to work with the legislature concerned, not the other branches of government. Like, you're not going to work with the executive, and you're not going to work with the judiciary. You just work with the legislature. It's exactly the same thing that's supposed to be happening with voting. Now, you know, these county clerk recorders and all these people that are out there, they're ancillary to what goes on with the legislatures in their states, when they're supposed to be focusing on the legislature writes the laws, they write the rules, they write the regulations. And of course, what we saw here with Dominion is on everybody's systems have come upon. In other words, you've got like a system it's done in certain ways in certain states by certain county clerk recorders to file and produce the ballots. Well, they're very specific, the directions in most states on what to file and what to put on those ballots. They don't want to change from that. And in fact, here in California, we sued Newsom because he actually had allowed this to go on in the state with all the county clerk recorders. They printed up 58 different types of ballots with different rules on them. Well, it says that in California code, there's another state, you cannot count or cast those ballots. So this is kind of the stuff that you know, you either are part of the legislature or you are not. And in fact, what happened with the Jefferson movement, they chose to use the judiciary system. They were shut down. Tim Draper just recently, oddly enough, as we started up, Tim Draper came out with the three-state solution for California to fix it. And he got on the ballot. Well, that's an executive function. And so a month before the election, oddly enough, this is in 2018, the Supreme Court of California, 6-0, threw it out. And they threw it out because it was unconstitutional. It was a violation of Article 4, Section 3. He should never have tried to get it on the ballot or work with the executive. So we work with the legislature concerned.
Okay, so if you're working with the legislature, then that seems like an insurmountable challenge to try to get the California legislature, which is almost all Democrats, to agree to the formation of New California as a state, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and it did, and it has, because now we get into the West Virginia model and tell the story about West Virginia. But West Virginia is the last state to as successfully use this process for statehood. Now, we have 50 states. Most of the states have gotten in through the territorial process. It's a whole different function. This process is when the state is being formed from a pre-existing state, which again begs the question, why would you leave a perfectly good state to form another state? Probably because there's something wrong with that pre-existing state. And that's exactly what the Founding Fathers designed. And that's exactly what was going on in 1861 with West Virginia and Virginia. Now, Virginia was at the point of seceding and joining the Confederacy. And there's much debate going on about that. The West Virginians, what they wanted to do is they wanted to form a new state because they did not want to be a slave state. They did not want to be a slave state. They didn't want the plantation thing going on. And so they started to organize to form a new state. It just so happened that Virginia had said in Richmond in their meetings that they will go ahead and allow the vote to see whether or not the people want to, you know, to secede and go with the Confederacy. Well, that vote came up, or it came up as an ordinance in Virginia's house and or when their Congress or their legislature, and they decided to go with the vote, but they never fulfilled the vote. They just actually dropped out. So what that meant to Virginia or West Virginia was West Virginia was left high and dry because in order to go through the process, you have to get the permission of that legislature to say, yes, you guys can go on to Congress. See you later. Fine. Goodbye. And they did not have anybody to appeal to because Virginia had basically their government had left them. And so what do you do at that point in time? So they went to Congress and said, well, we don't have anybody to appeal to. They're gone. They joined the Confederacy. And the Congress said, well, that's too bad. You still have to satisfy Article 4, Section 3 and get that permission. So a guy by the name of Francis Pierpont, he sat around. They're all kind of like disappointed because, you know, what do? We can't do this. We can't do that. What do we do? And so what they did is they decided to come up and create what would they later became known as the Virginia Restored Government. So they actually created a restored government for Virginia, and they appointed him to be the governor. And of course they selected an attorney general. They selected an assembly and Senate. They made their appeal. The West Virginians did. They made their appeal to that restored government. And of course they granted the appeal, and that gave them permission to go on to Congress. Congress accepted it. And they said, well, we don't think this is all that great. They don't like it. They finally worked it out with Abraham Lincoln, a person that many of the West Virginians did not like, but they appealed to him, and he went along with it. And 2 years later, West Virginia became a state. So what happened there, and the dynamics are, what happened was is that the government of Virginia pulled away and left their people high and dry. What also happened there is that the compact agreement, which is an enduring divine document, says it will go on forever. The compact between the Union of States called the United States of America and Virginia still held. There's a compact for every one of the states of the Union. That compact is critically important. It'll never be broken. That's the guarantee. When you become a state and you get into the United States, your state will forever be part of the United States. That's the agreement. So Virginia's government may have left. The people then rose up and just substituted a new government. That's exactly what they did.
Okay.
And right now, Mike, that's what we're doing.
But obviously, there are a lot of differences, though, because the current government of California, the Newsom administration, is not going anywhere, and they're not going to stand by and allow a restorative parallel government to claim dominion over California, right? So how do you get around that?
Well, it's real simple. It goes down to a real simple fact of the guarantee clause, but so many other things. And that is, you know, is California, I'll ask you, because you're in Texas, you see all the people from California and they're the evidence.
Yeah, we do.
But is California, does it have a Republican form of government? Does it have representative government? Do you think it does?
Well, I know it doesn't because of the vote rigging and the fraud in the election process.
That's a side issue, but that's a big one. Okay, do you think that we have freedom from invasion in California?
Well, no, obviously. In fact, Newsom is enabling the invasion.
That's right. And do you think we have we're free from domestic violence?
No, the Democrats are all in favor of anti-police movements.
I want to go to the Constitution. I'm deferring to the Constitution of the United States of America. The first three words say what?
Of the
U.S.
Constitution. We the people?
That's right. We the people.
Okay. I thought it was a trick question.
No, listen, I could ask you some trick questions. I'm a teacher, you know.
Pop quiz time.
Yeah. But seriously, we the people, this is what this is about. This is a we the people movement. We the people have risen up in New California and we're representative. We have about 200,000 people involved. We're not all of them all the time. In fact, you know, we suffer from attrition because people move to Texas and then they move to Florida. So that's another thing. But this is a we the people movement from 56 of the 58 counties in California. We have representatives pretty much in almost all of them. So this is really we the people that have moved up. And this is what we've done to show that we have constitutional standing, which is critically important. What we have done is we've declared ourselves independent from the state of California. If there's one thing you have to do in this process of statehood or making a new nation, you have to declare yourself independent. You know, I went to the Barcelona Olympics in 1992, and I ran into a bunch of people that were talking about, you know, wanting to be free, the Catalonians wanting to be free from Spain and all this other good stuff. And they sort of became friends over time and found out I was doing the Jefferson thing. One thing led to another. And so just recently, a couple of years ago, they decided they were going to declare independence. And they knew about our movement, but so they were kind of mimicking. And I said to them, did you declare independence yet? And they never did. And they never have. And you know what happened? I told them, I said, you know what's going to happen in the middle of the night? They're going to come and get you and kill you. And they did. They needed to declare independence and tell the world that they want to be an independent state. Get it out there. Be honest. That's exactly what the Founding Fathers did. The Founding Fathers, with that declaration, said, we want to be free and independent. We know that we have God-given rights, and we're exercising those God-given rights to become free and independent. You know what a statement that was in 1776?
Oh, I can only imagine.
It's massively profound. And of course, those elements that were destroying our freedom and liberty, that what we had without the Declaration, were working tirelessly to destroy the fledgling United States at the time.
Uh-huh.
They did not want this kind of government to go on. They wanted you to kneel down to the king, to the religious leaders and so on. They wanted no way that you should have your own individual independence as a person, which is guaranteed now, of course, to us. But the Declaration of Independence has served as an instrument freeing the world all over the place. So the first thing we did is we declared independence on January 15, 2018. When we declared independence in 2018, we then started a process of grieving, using the grievance process for 190 weeks every Tuesday at 11 o'clock. New Californians went out to the public square and started reading grievances. You can see them on the website, newcaliforniastate.com. Now, reading grievances, 190 weeks of telling the world why we have to be free from the state of California, from the oppression, from the treason, you know, from the tyranny that we're under certainly right now. So we did that, but we also had 9 constitutional conventions. At the very first convention, we stood up our first government, We stood up an assembly and a Senate. We authorized through resolution the approval of our Declaration of Independence. We got a preamble. We put God in the preamble. And then we set our course straight for the next several conventions to build our Constitution. We use those conventions as a building process. So we've had 9 constitutional conventions. We stood up a government. We have an excellent legislature. I wouldn't trade anybody for anything down in Sacramento, that's for sure. And they've been passing and approving with much deliberation. We do it on Zoom because we have to, but with many different things at the sign of our times. We've also taken on the challenges because we understand that if we're going to straighten the problem out, if we want to really straighten the problem out as New California, then we have to stand up to the tyranny. So when the whole COVID thing came up, man, we blew up like crazy. We said, what can we do to stop these characters? Because it was all happening at the local level. You know, United Nations Agenda 21, they talk about, you know, think globally, act locally. Well, they sure have done that to our states because every state now sort of has that local governmental situation where there's a tyranny that's developing. People don't really have much public, can't really make too many work autonomously as citizens like they used to. But what we have now in California is that the pushback had to come. And so we came up with a legal process. And in fact, it was the 8th Constitutional Convention, which we had Sidney Powell there. And I made the pronouncement at the time, this is in the, I think it was in the October, 2 years ago. And I said, we have 2 months to get something started to stop these people. And so we came up with declarations and affidavits. And since then, we put out 32,000 declarations and affidavits. That's really one of the final things you can do in the grievance process before you get to the Second Amendment, I might add. And so we personally started to take our judgments against individual state or government leaders, county supervisors, school boards, teachers, educators, anybody who is basically not following the Constitution, their oath of office. So since then, we've made quite a reputation for ourselves. We've had 13 county clerk recorders that have resigned or stood down based upon the numbers that we ran, because we did our own lawsuit and had our own numbers. All of our numbers have stood the strength, by the way. We came out, and your audience would be surprised. You don't hear this around much. It wasn't presented at Mike Lindell's conference, by the way, but California voted. This is our vote. We stand by these numbers 100%. Donald Trump won California with 15,800,000 votes. And Joe Biden had 4 million. That's how much they tweaked the system out here in California and to make sure that Biden would win. Now there are people reporting different numbers. Half of their numbers are accurate because they're the certified numbers that came from the counties. That shows you the level of fraud that's been going on.
Absolutely. But let me jump in here because we only have a few minutes left. But let me ask you, so in this process that you're describing, do you feel like you're on track with the process, and do you feel confident in the outcome of having the new California state at some point here? And do you have any predictions about timeframes for that?
Well, the crystal ball has really kind of shown itself now. We do. And I think we're 100% certain we're going to become the new next state. We're right now fashioning the restored government of California. We're doing that right now as we speak in meetings with the legislature. We're going to be standing up the new California state government or restored government. That is going to be probably next week. We'll be making announcements about who's what and where. And then we're going to go in past the election, and then we're going to start standing up that government. And we're going to start making plans, obviously, to restore the government. Now, what gives us the permission is the fact that California has failed at all those things. We declared California a state in constitutional default. We delivered that message to Gavin Newsom. I no longer call him the governor. He's known as Gavin Newsom and all of his other people in the legislature. California is a pure communist dictatorship. Gavin Newsom still has his authorities, his executive authorities that he took from the legislature. The legislature was happy to give up back in 2020. So he is by definition a dictator. The legislature doesn't do anything. It hides from everybody. And of course, neither does the judiciary help out very much. So it's a government in default is what it is. That gives us the opening like it gave to West Virginia. somebody's got to govern. So why not we the people do that? That's why we're standing up as we the people. And by the way, can you tell me any other organization out there that's a we the people movement like this, which is what the Constitution called for, which is what the founding fathers said we are supposed to do? We the people, it's right there on the Constitution. Is there any other one in the nation, Mike?
Well, no, but it brings up a question. When you're talking about we the people, I'm reminded that even during the Revolutionary War, that most of the people were not actively even involved in the Declaration of Independence or what was going on there, you know? I'm wondering about what about all the people who live in those counties that are going to become part of the new California state, and they're not even aware that this is about to happen. How does that work? Do they just wake up and at one point they're like, well, guess what? You're in a new state.
Well, first of all, they're going to be very blessed to be in the new state because we're going to take away those shackles that bind us by the Constitution of California right now. The California Constitution, which was written in 1879, is a corporation, the Constitution. So by that structure in itself, it means that we, the people, don't exist. It's only the bureaucrats that exist. And I'm giving you the short definition. But what's going to happen is all the regulations, all the different fees and taxes, everything is going to change completely for everybody in New California. And, from the cost of producing energy, right now, California pays over 30 cents per kilowatt hour.
Oh, we're going to get, kidding me.
No, we're going to get it down to seven cents an hour like you have in Texas, which we can do. We think we can stand that up in probably 5 or 6 months. Business is going to be central, of course. Education is going to be central. You won't have any of this stuff. The federal government is going to be told to get out of public education. And of course, that's what Schwarzenegger brought. Schwarzenegger, when he was governor, he brought in the federal government by agreeing to race the top tech bill, which was an application for money from the federal government, which meant that California, like all the states, if they wanted money from Race to Top under Obama, they had to give up their 10th Amendment right to educate the children.
Wow.
Which they did in 2010. So this is a return to all those things and more. Listen, we're a very oppressed people out here. That's really what I look at, is the oppression is enormous. People, when you go to another state, you really feel free and unbound, as you probably heard from people who come from California. Yes. And that's understandable because the oppression, like you said, thousands of businesses were run out by Gavin Newsom and his thugs in the California Resources Board and so on. This is an extortion economy now.
Yes.
Purely extortion. They are extorting money like the Nazis did, like the communists always do. So,
well, and we covered the fact that Newsom spent, I think it was $1 billion during COVID, sent it to a Chinese electric car company to purchase masks and PPE equipment, and then never heard anything more about it. And it was a giant money laundering operation, and the California press just ignored it and swept it under the rug. You know what I'm talking about, I think, right?
Yeah. No, we uncovered, and in fact, it was our Chris Street. Chris Street was with the governor's office back in 2022. He was actually a treasurer in Orange County, California, and he was asked to stand in an elite five-member panel to try and keep California solvent in 2008, 9, and 10, which he did. Wow. But he keeps in touch with these people all the time. And so he about 2 years ago said, you know, you guys are missing about $3 billion out of your EDD, which is the Employment Development Agency. And they said, oh, no, we're not. And of course, a couple of days later, I said, Chris, you're right. How'd you know that? Well, then it goes on and I jump in. I get my people to look at it. And they said, no, Paul, it's $13 billion. I said, really? So I run that by Chris. So we back and forth. Right now, they've settled on $180 billion that California has lost through the EDD in 15 months.
Unreal.
So listen, it gets worse because that, you know, for us in our research, this opened up Pandora's box. Well, what, they could get away with it. We understood how they got away with it. If they can get away with it, okay, how far back did it go? Because this is what we were being reported. My team, and Chris, he's got the yes and no. He's an economist, so he's always going to be down on the low side. But my team came up with a number of $385 billion that has been laundered through the California EDD since the beginning of the COVID. That's $1 trillion. That's $1 trillion, Mike. But listen, it gets better.
Wait. Are you saying $380 billion a year?
$385 billion in about a 15-month period.
Now, where is all this money going?
China.
For what purpose?
Well, when they stopped putting out the money in April, China collapsed. They need the cash.
Wait, are you saying that Newsom and China are working together to prop up China's collapsing economy?
Absolutely, we're saying that, straight up.
Wow.
That's what this extortion scheme is all about. That's what this is all about. It's about how to extort money out of the federal government and turn it over to China. But it gets better, because you go back to motor voter. And you go back to motor voter, which is, by the way, the basic mechanism by which all this is brought about. But you go back in 1996 era, and you'll find out that, you know, gosh, they've been money laundering since 1996 and even before that to China out of California. And you know what that number is? And that, by the way, I shouldn't just say California, because New York's involved, Illinois is involved, a couple other states are involved through their retirement systems and so on. That number is, are you ready for this?
Yeah.
$30 trillion.
Whoa, that's the national debt.
Coincidence, isn't it?
Yeah, interesting. And then we also know that the whole war with Ukraine, an element of that right now is money laundering through the so-called weapons that are being sent to Ukraine. Actually, a lot of that's obviously just money laundering operations through Ukraine.
Right. Well, they're following the same system out here in California. There's Ukraine gets East Coast money from Washington and, of course, through the State Department. And through California, China gets money.
So imagine if that money came back to the people where it belongs.
How about we, the people, saying, wait a minute, right. You know, no more of this PPE business or any of this other chicanery that's going on.
Now, okay, we are about out of time here, but last question, how can people, you know, get involved or support this transition to a new California state?
Well, we need a lot of funding. And of course, we've been doing hand-to-mouth business for the last several years, but now we have to do attorneys and we have to do going off to Washington and things like that. So if you could kindly donate to newcaliforniastate.com, it says legal fund at the very front of the website, please do so. You can call in, or you can actually go to the website and join and become a part. Those of you that are out of state and you want to come back, or you know, you feel the loyalty, come on back. We certainly are going to welcome you back. We understand why you left. It's tyranny. But you know, you have to understand why we new Californians, we've stood the test of time and we stand our ground. And we are not going to let this tyrant or any tyrant run us out of our own state. That's not happening. Trust me, it's not happening. And we remain committed to that. We are Americans and we are standing strong as Americans in New California. We New Californians do not run. And I mean that. And I know that you in Texas, it's kind of interesting to look at the history of California and Texas. We're sister states. There's two Lone Star states. California is one of them. And so is Texas, obviously. And both declared their original independence from Mexico in 1836. March for Texas and in November, coming up to the anniversary, November for California. And it was called Nuevo California. California.
See, and that's interesting in terms of history, because people are very familiar with the phrase New England, which refers to the northeast of the United States. Well, it was called that because it was getting away from England. It was the New England. And then, like you said, we have New Mexico, which people don't even think about it. What does that mean? It's the New Mexico. It came from Mexico. And then, you know, Texas and California don't have those names, but there's New Hampshire. I mean, West Virginia, as you said, North and South Dakota, and so on. This is part of American history. It's a normal part of history.
It's a normal this forming a state like this is a normal part of history. And when you have a state that's stepped out of bounds, like you had with Virginia when they left and formed the Confederacy, and now California's they've left. They've given up the ability to govern because they can't govern. And the reason why they can't is because they're so bound by the restrictions in their own constitution of 1879, that constitution modified over 920 times. It's been amended 920 times. And as I was telling the story at the very beginning, they can't get out of that. And they can't financially get out of that right now. And that's why it's a doomsday scenario for them. And that's why we're making New California.
Well, you may actually have an opportunity to do the restorative type of function, because there is a point, I believe, where the California government suffers a critical financial collapse. I don't know when that is, but I know that day is coming.
Real soon.
Yeah.
Real soon.
Look at what's happening in the world. Yeah. So you're going to be there ready to form the new state in the absence of a functioning California government. That timing is incredible.
And then we'll be moved on to Congress. And that's when the fun begins, because that's when we kick in with our economy in New California, which is going to help pull out the United States from this depression that they're going to be in. That's the key. That's what we're trying to do. We wanted to make this a win-win for California, a win-win for New California. And by bringing us in as the next state, it automatically strengthens the union of states we call the United States of America. That's the way the system's supposed to work. Bring in a new state, it makes the whole union stronger.
Yeah, and if you just legalize freedom, then you have unlimited abundance.
Yeah, how about that?
It's very simple, yeah.
Yeah, how about that? Then you have taxes too. I mean, none of this, I mean, Newsom's planning on calling a special session of the legislature, which meets way too much anyway, on the 5th, so he can tax the gas more. He's shocked. Right. He's absolutely shocked. It's like in Casablanca, he's shocked that they're going to have profits at Standard Oil. So he's going to tax them. There you go.
Yeah, and he'll probably take that tax money and then say he's going to use it to subsidize lower gas prices. You know,
that's correct.
He's just that crazy. All right. Well, Mr. Preston, I'm blown away. I'm totally impressed by, now that you've explained this to me, and thank you for doing so. You have such a grasp of history and this process, and you are meticulous, and you're documenting this, and you have wide participation. I'm more hopeful now than ever before that this can succeed. So thank you for sharing this with me.
Well, thank you for allowing me to share it with your wider audience. And, we're here to strengthen the nation. That's really what we're all about. We're saving the nation and we're strengthening the nation. So all the help we can get is much appreciated. Thank you very much.
Well, absolutely. And as a Texan, we would welcome a new California. We don't need a new Texas. We're just going to be Texas the whole right. way through.
That's right.
We are Texas.
That's right.
Yeah.
And stand as Texas. Absolutely.
We're going to stand as Texas. Exactly. All right. So the website, folks, is newcaliforniastate.com. Our guest has been Paul Preston. Thank you so much, Mr. Preston. It's always an honor. I hope to have you back soon.
Absolutely, Mike. Thank you.
All right. Take care. A global reset is coming. And that's why I've recorded a new 9-hour audiobook. It's called The Global Reset Survival Guide. You can download it for free by subscribing to the naturalnews.com email newsletter, which is also free. I'll describe how the monetary system fails. I also cover emergency medicine and first aid and what to buy to help you avoid infections. So download this guide. It's free. It's my gift to you simply because I want like-minded people to survive.